you've got a project where you've been digging up stories about people whose names you've seen in cemeteries locally. And you've got, first we should say that there's a book, and you've written a book, and there's a book launch tonight at the museum.
That's correct.
Yeah, and what time is that?
Opens at 5:30, and then I'm just going to do a brief recap of some of the stories in the book at 6 o'clock.
Okay. And just for context, I actually got very confused because I was just talking to Elizabeth Dennis. Your husband is actually Dennis Amor, who I talk to quite a bit on the radio. So you're Dennis's wife.
That's
great. And you guys have been part of the Raglan scene for three generations, I think.
That's correct.
So, yeah. So were there people in the cemeteries that you were looking at that you're related to?
Dennis's auntie's in there.
Okay. That's in the Raglan Cemetery. Yeah, which is down, what street's that?
East Street,
yeah. I used to know people who lived over the road a long time ago. So you've written a book. Is the book just stories of the people that you found? Is that what it consists of?
Mainly, I did a little bit of background on Raglan at the beginning of the book, and then I've focused mainly on people who are buried between 1860 and 1940. So I had to make a stop because that actually includes 187 people anyway, going between 1860 to 1940.
Yeah. Now, I understand, are some of the graves unmarked? Or the names are lost?
Quite a lot of the graves are unmarked, especially the early graves. So that probably could have been a financial restraint at the time. Or some of the families, perhaps they lost a young child, then they moved away before they put a headstone on. So,
are there also unmarked, fully unmarked graves?
Yes, quite most of the, probably the older graves, there's probably one third unmarked graves, no names.
Right.
And then also, when we're looking at the maps of the cemetery, we've got names of people buried there, but we've got no plot numbers. So,
you know that somewhere under the grass,
somewhere down there,
there are people as well.
Some, I couldn't find out which plots they were in.
Okay.
But we know they're buried there.
Right. People don't like to walk over exactly where the body is. Does it make you feel weird walking around the cemetery when you're like, well, there might be, or do you just not worry about that? Don't go there.
No, that doesn't worry me as I'm walking. I always find cemeteries really interesting places to be in because of so much history and looking around.
The Stuff article about your book has you walking through the cemetery as if you spend all your time at cemeteries. Is that very accurate?
Well, I spent a lot of time at cemeteries, and especially when we go to places, we stop and look at them. But Raglan Cemetery we've spent a lot of time there trying to match plot numbers with the map so we can get it accurate and see where they are.
Yeah. Mm. So what sparked this interest for you, so much interest that you wanted to write a book?
Well, two things. When I'd go out there and look at plots, I wanted to know more. And the other thing is that I'm quite passionate about preserving the past.
Yeah.
And a lot of stories be lost. And I thought people are getting, who probably have the information, are getting older. And we could lose that. And it's one way of recording it for future.
Okay. So, and how do you find out the information? Like you see a name on a headstone. And what do you do from there?
Right. First of all, try and see if I know any family members.
Yep.
If not, I go into all these genealogical websites and look up like MyHeritage, Ancestry.com, and see if any links come up there.
Yeah.
And go to Papers Past, and you might get a birth or a death announcement there for the early ones. And
is that all online, the Papers
all
Past?
All online, so I do a lot of research online.
Yeah. Imagine having to do that before the internet. Would you have to go to Wellington or something like that, like the National Library?
To go to National Libraries. We're so lucky to have the internet now.
Yeah, it makes all sorts of things possible. Mm. And if you can find, are you basically looking for someone who's alive who can talk about that person?
Initially, yes.
Yeah.
But a lot of the people in here, families have moved on.
Yes.
And that made it a little bit harder. And perhaps because even though it was a requirement from 1837 to register births and deaths, a lot of them didn't. And I suppose in the early ones, perhaps the registrar wasn't in Raglan. Perhaps they forgot to do it. And you'll find quite a few, especially young children, no registration of births or deaths.
Right. So there's been quite a few that you just haven't been able to track down.
No. Not the actual birth date. Probably the death date we have.
Yeah.
But Papers Past have been good because sometimes they'll put in a death announcement or a birth.
Yeah.
But not always. So.
Did you dig up any terrible phrase to use. Any amazing surprises when you start researching people's stories?
Yes. Probably one I'm going to talk about tonight was Margaret Frost. She actually was Guide Molly at Whakarewarewa.
Okay.
Got sent to Raglan for health reasons and was working at the Raglan Hotel when she died.
Okay. Not in the fire, I hope.
No, not in the fire. She just died at Raglan. But we've got people like that. Who else? We've also had David McNeish. He was an amazing person. He was born in Jamaica, so his mother was Jamaican. His father was Scottish. Travelled all around the world,
yeah.
Came to Raglan, entered a common law marriage with a local Maori woman,
yeah.
And had 7 children.
Right.
So he's travelled the world, even went on a hunting trip in India. So, and then there was also 3 babies that are buried in the cemetery were children of belonged to families of the 65th Regiment.
Okay, so that are we going back to like the land wars?
The land wars time.
Okay, for that.
But they marched from Otahuhu down to Raglan.
And they brought their families with them?
Yes, and I haven't been able to find out how the wives came, but whether they had to march or they travelled in wagons. But there's 3 little babies, none of them live longer than a month.
Wow.
So weather conditions in the tents, I haven't been able to find more out about that. But
yeah.
You don't hear much about the wives coming to Raglan.
No, I mean, I had no idea, but I guess, I mean, everything was... You had to walk pretty much. That was the only way around the country, or boat. I guess they could have come down by boat if they really wanted to. But
well, the men had to march, I presume. Unless the wives came from boat, I don't know.
Yeah, there's so much. When you get down to, you start looking into the stories just in your area, you realise there's just so much history, and every little place has its own story. Mm. And that's just like unearthing more. Like that was a really tumultuous time in our history, and families were brought along with the regiments. I know when they were doing things like creating the passes through the Southern Alps,
mm-hmm.
that the families would come along too with the men who would, because they had to hand dig their way through, and they would just spend all winter in these horrible dark valleys and never see the sun. And yeah,
amazing.
So at least they could see the sun in Raglan. So that is the main story about that regiment, that just that the families came along and that there were 3 babies, and we don't know anything more about the babies?
No. I've written about them.
Yeah.
But the families then moved on. Oh, one of them...
So you can't even find their relatives? Or
I have traced the parents' names and who they were.
Yeah.
One of the children, Constable Bulford, he actually stayed on and became the community constable in Raglan.
Okay.
He took a discharge along with his brother from the 65th Regiment and didn't go back to England. So stayed in Raglan, married a local girl,
yeah.
Sarah Phillips, which is one of Thomas Phillips's children.
Yeah.
So they stayed in. The other ones was Captain McGregor. So he's in charge of the 65th Regiment. So he was ordered back to England. So he lost a son here. During the New Zealand Wars, he sent his wife to Auckland, and then she travelled down to Nelson, where she had another... their second son, who also died. They had a daughter, Sydney, who was 7. Now, Captain McGregor went back to England. His wife followed 2 years later. And on the journey back to England, the daughter, Sydney, died of yellow fever. So their 3 children all died.
You wouldn't be... your mental health would be in a terrible state by the end of that, wouldn't it?
It must have affected them. Yeah. But
could you follow up the rest of their history, or is that...
Yes,
kind of...
he came back to New Zealand. He and his wife came back to New Zealand, and both died in Napier.
Did they have any more kids? Or
no,
did they,
no more
that was,
children.
That was enough.
They lost the 3, so...
And, of course, we know that was much more common in those days. Mm. Like, when I've looked at family trees in my family, you see so many children died in that, what we call the colonial period, I guess.
It is.
Yeah. And the cemetery were... Was there a thing where Maori people were buried somewhere else and it was only the European settlers who were buried in the cemetery?
Searching this area, most of them, if they had Maori wives or Maori husbands, they seemed to go back to their local urapa, connected to the iwi.
Yeah.
Like John Charlton's wife, she went back down the coast just past Kawhia, I can't remember where her she got buried, but she went back to her family,
okay,
Urapa,
yeah,
and he's buried in the cemetery. But interesting, two of their children are buried in Raglan Cemetery. They okay. didn't go back, so.
Well, maybe they get to choose where they do. And do you, I guess this begs the question: you spend so much time in this, do you have things planned for your own end of life? Do you,
definitely.
Got that all sorted out?
All sorted.
Yeah? Got Dennis sorted out as well?
I definitely got him sorted.
Oh, that's good. He's probably too busy doing other things. But yeah, that's... Does it make you think, focus more on like end of life for yourself, doing this sort of thing? Or is it not really? I'm just
probably
imagining
more
that.
Celebration of life. I think we're very probably lucky and blessed to be living in this era.
Yeah.
Because when you look back on what they had to endure, like... some of the conditions. See, some of the young children even died of starvation. So probably no wet nurses around.
Yep.
No milk supplements.
So if the mother couldn't feed them, they were kind of stuck. Mm.
One little baby was a month old and died of starvation.
So oh, Lord. That
that would have been quite sad to watch a child die.
That would have been horrific. Mm. Not just sad, just beyond sad. Mm. Yeah, yeah. So your talk this evening at the museum, remind us the time again?
It's museum's opening at 5:30.
Yeah.
6 o'clock, there'll be a small introduction and I'll give a short talk.
Okay, and you're going to be telling, you've got more stories like the ones
stories,
we've just mentioned here?
Different ones.
Yeah.
One of the interesting things I found, like for the early settlers, there was actually 7 flax mills operating at one time in the 1860s. 70s in Raglan area.
Yeah, I had heard there were. I heard there were flax mills. I didn't realise there were so many. Mm. But I guess that was because rope was. That's how they made rope. And was the flax sent? Was it sent to Sydney to be manufactured? Well,
they sent the mocha. You know, when it's scraped off, that got sent to Sydney to be made into rope. So.
Okay. Yeah, we were like the backwater. Sydney's backwater, I think.
That's
a little
correct.
Bit. Yeah. I read when you go to the Treaty House up at Waitangi. Mm. Like I used to work in the building industry and there was a story there about all the weatherboards that were sent out from Sydney and this huge proportion of them, like I think over a third, were defective in some way. And I could just see the guys in Sydney be like, oh, don't worry, it's only New Zealand, just, yep. You know, anything will do. And I was like, the building industry's always been this way. Like there's always, your deliveries are always compromised in some way, but then you're in New Zealand and what can you do?
Well, that's it. And yeah. they were isolated, like small communities. But one thing I found out, Raglan got the first community runanga, or Maori constable, who worked under the other constable.
Yeah.
And that was before the other townships in New Zealand.
Okay.
So he was appointed in 1861. So he worked with the local iwi and the local police force.
Right.
It was like the go-between.
Yeah. So Raglan's always leading the way.
Mm.
Interesting. Yeah. And so, and have you got lots of photographs in the book?
Definitely. We've included a lot of old ones of Raglan as well. So just because I like the history and it's one way of recording those.
Yeah, yeah. And is this something that an interest that's grown as you've become older, like not something you were that excited about in your 20s?
Probably didn't have time, but definitely grown as I've got older.
Yeah, yeah. So is that actually the book there? Like we haven't had time because I was interviewing someone else. Okay, so this is quite a big... So this is the final copy, very big, lots of information. And you're trying to get, like, when you track down living family members, you're asking them if they've got photos as well.
Definitely photos or anything else about the family. Sometimes you get different family members. You can get... Both tell these stories, and there might be some contradiction, so you've just got to take them...
Almost always, I'd say.
Middle road, and try and work out dates. So.
Yeah, I mean, my family has a story, like my name is Moore, but it's spelled M-O-O-A-R. Mm. So there's stories about that, and I've noticed that, like, I've got relatives in other parts of the country who I've never met, but I think I've bumped into them online, and they don't know the same story that I know, so I'm kind of like, well, I was told by my grandfather who knew the original one, but yeah... It's all word of mouth.
It is word of mouth. And like the oral histories handed down, like they've got the Baker family. Some of the family members thought that they were in the Kaukaukapa Hotel when it burnt down. But no, they were actually ran the hotel, but they'd moved to Raglan before it burnt down. So you can see just how it just gets passed down and a little bit changed.
Yeah. And speaking of burnies, there were lots of buildings burnt down in those days.
Oh, definitely.
That was when I talked with John Lawson about like we do a little history segment every now and again. The amount of buildings that burnt down, I guess they were just getting, they didn't have electric lights, they had candles and
fires, open fires in the buildings.
And everything was made of timber because everything tipped over in New Zealand with earthquakes. It was made of stone, so it's a wonder they didn't give up in this country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah. So what are you going to do next?
I'm just writing at the moment the history of St. Peter's Church and the history of the Ragnall Surf Life Saving Club, and then I'm on to more cemeteries.
Oh, right. So there's no stopping you then.
No, I'm just kind of passion that takes over.
Yeah, so St. Peter's is just across the court, across the roundabout. Okay.
And Ragnall Surf Life Saving Club's 50th.
Okay. Mm. And I know your family's been quite involved with the surf life saving.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, you're going to be very busy, I can see. So, folks, we've been talking to Elizabeth Amore, normally known as Liz, I guess, to most people. Going to be at the museum tonight for the book launch, or this evening, really, because the doors open at 5:30, don't
That's
they?
That's correct.
Yeah. And people can pick up a copy of the book. Are you going to sign the book?
Yes, I'll sign some.
You'll sign the book. Mm. I made a DVD years and years ago, and someone tried to get me to sign it, and it felt so weird. I refused to do it, but...
It does.
Yeah. Don't take a while to get used to. Hey, look, thanks very much for coming in this morning.
Thank you.
Oh, and if people can't get along, but they want to get a copy of the book...
They'll have them at the Ragnall Museum.
Okay, so I can always pop into the iHub there and track it down.
That's correct.
Awesome. Thank you very much.